We are delighted that this week's episode is sponsored by The Animal Guys, who tour the UK and Europe educating audiences about all creatures, great and small.
Having just completed a sellout theatre tour, what makes The Animal Guys different is they've developed an entire show that involves no live animals.
They truly believe in learning through laughter and educating families today so that we can save the animals of tomorrow.
To find out more and for tickets to their tour, just Google The Animal Guys. Pretty much anything that we get today comes with an instruction manual. Except, of course, kids. Wouldn't it be great if children came with an instruction manual? But they don't. So all we can do as parents is do our best. And our best is usually copying the only parenting model that we know, which was our parents.
I mean, yes. So we either tend to copy our own parents or we learn from what we believe with their mistakes. So, you know, if, for example, you had absent parents, like maybe, you know, my parents were both quite absent because of their sort of lifestyles, then what I've done is I think I overcompensated for that. I think, I don't know.
Which, again, I mean, you know, your parents were absent, which isn't a great thing. You overcompensate, which again isn't a great thing.
No.
So, you know, so it's really, it's a fine line between those two, which would have been perfect. But again, how you, having them absent made you feel like you needed to overcompensate.
Yeah.
So it's so difficult being a parent,
really
because
is.
Even with the absolute best of intentions, we can get things wrong because we don't know how our children are going to perceive our best intentions.
And I think that's a really good point because I think that people have put so much pressure on themselves to parent and to be the perfect parent. And, you know, a friend of mine's literally just had a baby and I know already I see that in her that she's trying to think, what can I do that'll be the best thing to do? And, you know, trying to do everything absolutely right and perfect from the get-go. And I think that we do put that pressure on. And the truth is that there is no perfect way to parent. There is no perfect parent. And even like with what you're saying there, even if you did everything absolutely perfectly, you can't control how certain things that you do or say will be interpreted. You can't control, you know, once your children get to school, there's so much of things
true.
That we cannot control that you can only really do your best. And like you were saying there, that in some circumstances, there isn't a perfect because you can be, there's benefits of one thing over another. So, you know, for example, if you have had parents that have been more absent, yes, of course, that might have affected you negatively, but equally, it might have taught you some things about being independent and being able to do more for yourself. So you are one of the most independent people that I know, and you function so well doing things for yourself because you've always had to.
And that's true. I mean, that is one thing that I would say that I'm incredibly grateful for is that because, you know, look, my parents were great providers and I learned like cooking from my mum and things like that. But what that did make me is very self-sufficient.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure it's independence or self-sufficiency, whether there's what's the difference between those. But I am very capable, you know, like there is, you know, I can clean a house, work, cook, organize and do all sorts. And but going back to pressure of parenting, I feel that so when you asked me to marry you, I actually declined your very kind offer because quite truthfully I didn't want children. And why, and when I think about why did I not want children, well, I kind of realized that if I was going to be a parent, I needed to be a full-on parent. And I didn't know, A, whether I'd be good enough, but B, the primary thing was, if I became a parent, could I invest and offer the time that I felt you two, Hunter and Liv, would need and deserve? So like when you were both born, things that I would do with you, having sort of worked
Hold on, you've jumped forward there because you've just gone from, I didn't want any children because I didn't think I'd be able to devote the time and effort, right? So that's got to come from somewhere and you've got to have looked or you had some perception of that time and effort, what that would be.
Well, and that's where I was going with that.
You're talking about how those two, but we'd not had them at this point.
But that time and effort would mean things like, you know, I'd want to speak to them in Polish so that, like me, they could be bilingual. I wanted to read with them. I wanted to write with them. I wanted to entertain them in an educational way so that they were, you know, as smart as they could possibly be.
I think you wanted to do it perfectly.
I did.
And therefore felt that would be a massive commitment and weren't sure you could commit that, right?
That's 100%.
That's the bottom line. And sorry, I'm just going to have to pause 1 second because I actually want to just ask a question here that I've never, ever asked yet. Something you just said there that just came to mind. And I'll bring back to what we were talking about in a second. But you mentioned there about dad proposing to you, and I realised I have never, ever, in all the time I have known you, which is 27 years of life to date, ever asked you how that happened. Ever.
Really?
I have never asked that question.
And actually, she threw some shade on it, saying that she declined, which she didn't. Right?
Well, this is the thing. I've never asked you.
Yeah.
Like, how that happened. I want to know, like, did he ask your dad for permission? Was like a traditional thing like that? Or did you just go for it? And I also wonder, like, did you, like, know she was going to say yes? Well, obviously, she said she didn't. But, like, did you know she was going to say yes? Was it a risk? Was it like, there's so many questions that have just come up here.
I don't think, you know, as a man, I don't think you'd ask someone to marry them if you didn't think you're going to get a yes. I mean, it would be...
Well, true, actually.
Yeah, you know, gamble, I mean, what your mum was saying there, alluding to, saying, you know, we'd had conversations where she said, you know, I couldn't get married because... you want children and I don't.
Correct.
Right. So she said that, right?
Right. So let me just clarify here. So it wasn't like a situation where you were like sat in a restaurant, like you pulled a ring out, everybody turned around and looked.
Yeah.
You got on one knee. Everyone's like excited. And she went, no.
No, it wasn't.
And everyone went, oh.
But no. Anyone
it wasn't any of that.
But anyone listening to this, to this point, might have thought of that.
Yeah. Can I just tell you exactly what happened?
Because I'm already seeing it in my head. Like, luckily, there was no like social media back then that people were like filming it. Everyone's filming it. And then it's like, oh, no, sorry.
Okay. So what actually happened is we had many discussions. We were together for maybe 4 or 5 years before we got married. It was dragging a bit, maybe. But we had discussions about getting married, and I said I couldn't marry dad because he wanted kids. I didn't. However, there came a point where your dad actually said, well, I want to be with you, whatever that takes. So let me tell you about your dad's romantic proposal, Olivia and Hunter. Sorry, giving you your full Sunday name there, Liv.
I'm surprised they don't know. That's an interesting thing, though, to say about parenting. And one thing that I regret from with my parents is not asking them enough about the life. I sort of took them for granted in that way, because there's so many things now that I wish I would have asked my mum and dad, and they're not with me anymore, and I'll never find the answers. Right, so just like this has come up, you should know these things.
Well, that's nice. Helpful doing a podcast.
Isn't it?
Force us to chat. No, but tell me anyway, go on.
Yeah, so we'd just bought a beautiful little cottage, and the night before we'd had like our house blessed, obviously because I'm sort of quite religious, and had the house blessed. We had a party straight afterwards, and I got annihilated. Like, I am talking absolutely smashed. Next morning, I'm coming round, vomiting my hair, feeling like absolute crap. I opened my eyes, your dad's kneeling on the floor and said, will you marry me?
Now, were you in the bathroom being sick, or were you just in bed asleep?
At that point, I had done the crawl back and forth through the night and to the toilet, but I was now laying in bed, sort of fast asleep, feeling awful. And like I said, I opened my eyes, and then your dad's there on one knee at the side of the bed and asked me to marry him. And I said, are you joking when I look like this? And he said, well, if I can love you when you look like this,
I will love
you forever.
And I can sort of see that in two ways, really, because like, I think that nowadays it's like really popular, isn't it, to like do this like massive proposal, like the most romantic thing you can think of. I think you would have preferred that. And like, this brings out a difference between us. I think the females in our family, i.e. us two, are very thoughtful, and we try and like think of surprises and like planning things and whatever.
I think Hunter's quite thoughtful.
I'd say me and Mum over you two.
Oh, no. When it comes to like, okay, so your 50th, like I planned like everything to a nail. Like, there was surprises, there was days,
yes,
like so many things that you didn't know about. And that's where, and I like, so I already know what you're getting for Christmas, right? I can tell you now, there'll be no one else around this table that knows what they're getting you for Christmas.
And there's nobody around this table that
actually,
I can say
that's
I
not
know.
True.
It's not true, I've already bought the Christmas present.
Stop it.
Liar.
It's true.
Oh my God, see, tumbleweed.
Well, okay. Well, yeah. Fair enough.
Anyway,
my point is though, generally, I think that the boys are less like into coming to like planning things and surprises
totally
and stuff.
I totally disagree with that.
I have no evidence.
Give us some evidence, Hunter.
What do you mean?
I think you're thoughtful.
Yeah, I think more so my friends and stuff in the family, because there's not many opportunities to do it with family, really.
Maybe. Okay, well, I'm just going off the fact that usually, like, mum's birthday, like, on the day, you're like, oh, we should probably get mum a present. Whereas I would, like, plan it months in advance.
For example, for Father's Day this year, I got dad a single from the band we were going to see, so you get it signed.
You've got better.
That was quite...
You've got better. Yeah. Also, you definitely got better.
That was really good.
I know.
You've definitely got better. But I just think that, like, that's my point being, though, is that I think that dad necessarily wouldn't think to plan something like that. So looking at it through dad's eyes, I actually think that's super thoughtful. Does that make sense?
Like, really?
Anyway, let's move on. He wouldn't be a planner, so like he's tried to think of something there that's actually really sweet, and it's like, even in the worst state, he wants to marry us. I can see that, even though it's not the big plan.
Just if ever you're gonna ask me again, can we do, like, you know, Eiffel Tower, something. No, in fact, I don't want to go to the Maldives. Take me to the Maldives.
So you're trying to say that it wasn't a good enough effort? Is that what you're saying? You know, comparing it to something that you would have liked.
Yeah. No. Listen, it was very nice of you, and the meringue was gorgeous and all that. However, let's carry on with the discussion.
Okay.
Which
so that's all I wanted
parenting.
To know. But I'll bring it back to parenting. So the point being is, I think you put a lot of pressure on yourself to be a perfect parent and
perfect everything. That's something I've always felt not good enough. I always felt that I had to overcompensate in everything, whether that's a friendship, whether that is as a wife, as a housewife, as some, you know, in work, as a mum to you both. And yes, I think that I put massive pressure on myself to be a perfect everything.
Do you not think that everyone wants to be the perfect parents? And I remember when I was little, this book knocking about, and I was just Googling what it was called, right? And I remember this book being in our house, and it's called Dr. Spock's Baby in Childcare.
Now, when you say in our house, you mean your home when you were a kid?
Yeah, when I was little.
Yeah, because Spock's even before my time.
Yeah, Dr. Spock. Well,
Is Dr. Spock not from Star Trek or something like that?
There is also a Dr. Spock from Star Trek, but it's not the same. I now have learned.
So this isn't a Star Trek book?
No, because when your dad's mum used to go on about it, and your dad went on about it, I was assuming it was the Vulcan that was Dr. Spock that had parenting advice, but it wasn't.
So this book was published in 1946. Let's just have a think how long ago that was. But anyway, it's called The Common Sense Book of Baby and Childcare by Dr. Benjamin Spock.
Right.
And I know that this was in my mum and dad's house. And my mum used to, wanting to be the best parent, thought, well, you know, who would know better about parenting than a paediatric doctor?
Yeah.
And I'm just looking on Google here. It says, what is Spock's theory of parenting? I don't know what this is. I'm just going to read it. Overall, Spock's advice: encourage caregivers to help children fit into the current needs of society and become contributing members of that society.
And that's a good point, because when we're a contributing member to society, what that means is that, you know, that we might be doing stuff, we might be doing some voluntary work. So I kind of get that. But overriding, though, is your child knowing that they're
loved. He advocated for parents to instill values of cooperativeness and congeniality and help their children to be likeable. I mean, it worked for me, let's be honest.
Well, I think my children are very, very likable, both of you. Can I just state that Hunter's voice today?
It's
very deep.
It is very deep.
He has a deep voice anyway, but it's particularly deep today.
I'm very ill.
Oh,
bless you. Really bad.
He does. His voice sounds like somebody. I'm trying to think, who could it be?
Do you know what? I know who it sounds like. I'm gonna
who is that?
I've got a thought here.
I've got an idea.
Okay, hang on. Right.
I don't know if this is going to be particularly flattering for me.
Okay, what do we think? Does this sound like Hunter today?
The Emperor does not share your optimistic appraisal of the situation.
What do you think?
Oh.
See, for me, it's more like that. So that's Darth Vader, isn't it?
Yeah, Darth Vader, yeah.
So James L. Jones.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing.
It's a bit, but I think this one's better, right? See if you recognise this one. Sorry, hang on. We're nearly there. Here we go. Right, here we go. Here's the voice.
No, I don't think so.
That's it.
What do you think? I think Darth Vader's better.
This is Barry White. No,
Barry White.
This is you, Hunter.
Is that better?
Hunter thinks he sounds like Darth Vader. But I think that you're definitely more Barry White today.
The Emperor does not share your...
But anyway, so going back to parenting, look, I think the most important thing, and this is something that... not just as therapists, but also as parents. I think the main thing, the most key component to being a parent is not about the latest fashion. It's not about the latest toys. It's about that child knowing always that they have unconditional love, that they have unconditional support, that they always have a safe place to come back to. And obviously, you know, around the table, there's two people that have more kids than me and Nick, being you two.
I don't have any kids. Yes, no,
you're more kiddified than us because you're a bit younger than us. But you know, would you not agree that those things are far more important than absolutely? Of course, you know, all kids want to have the latest fashion. All kids want to have the latest phones and the latest technology and all that. But ultimately, I think that knowing that you're loved, supported, that there's always, like I say, a safe base for you.
Yeah, I agree. I think that you can kind of get caught with everything else, but and you can make mistakes, but as long as you have those three things that you just said, I think that's the most important. Like even going to America, I know that was hard on you, and it was a big thing for me to go over there. And I know it wasn't easy for you, and you very easily could have said no or stop me, but I know that you love me and you wanted to do what was best for me, and I was able to do that because of the result. So yeah. I massively agree.
No, I think the same. I think that, you know, and I think it's so hard for parents, and especially, you know, nowadays that it seems to be, there are more gadgets, there's more things that, you know, tech things that children want, and parents wanting to make sure their children don't feel left out because they've not got all the latest things that their friends have got. Equally trying to balance, you know, life is expensive and that's difficult. And on top of that, trying to balance making their child feel loved. But then there's this big thing, isn't there, about having to be able to provide for that child is to go out to work. But then obviously feeling that you're putting work above spending time with that child. It's such a difficult balance. It is. And it's so hard to find and to know what's the right thing to do in that circumstance.
I mean, we felt that, didn't we? We felt that guilt of leaving.
And I think all parents feel that guilt of, you know, in an ideal world, you will have children and you'll spend your days with them.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't go to work in an ideal world. You know, and maybe that we're seeing more of that because more people are working from home these days.
True.
More, you know, I think that in the future, and I read something, perhaps in the next 10 years, the 9-to-5 going to the office will cease, mm-hmm. and more people will.
But then do you not think equally it goes back to what I was saying before about like there's no right way of doing things, because there can be bad things about that as well. So like if you spend all your time with your child, then the child can sort of have separation anxiety and struggle with kind of doing things for itself as well. So, you know, I think that it's hard.
Yeah.
Like there's no right answer, because equally, like it can go wrong or right in both circumstances.
Can I tell you what I think is the right solution?
Go on.
I think the solution to that is that obviously if you have to work, that number one, you shouldn't feel guilty, because what I do know is that by sending you guys to school and to nursery, that helped you with your sociable skills, that helped you with your educational skills, that helped you to be able to become more independent. So for us to hold you back in that regard would actually be selfish. So yes, I know that when you're little and you first go to school, you don't want to. However, I think you've got to let your children go. You've got to let them go to school. Like Hunter said, him going to university, you going to university. You know, what we've also got to remember as parents is that we've been molding you and shaping you to be able to do that. So despite the fact that I was a rec hunter and I cried all the way home from America when we dropped you off, and I cried on the aircraft, and if I tell you that 10-20 people came up to me and went, "Miss, are you all right?"
I mean, let's be honest, you did that driving home from Oxford, so flying home from America was like that on steroids.
It was. However, what I did keep reminding myself of is that this is what, as parents, we were working up to, that you were both clever enough to go to university, that you were both confident enough to be able to go on that journey on your own, basically. Yeah. So I think that the fine line is a bit of both. And you're quite right, Liv, that if you overprotect your child, if you don't allow them to sort of mingle and interact with the world, then that is a real injustice to that child.
Don't you think that the answer then here lies in communication?
100%.
And what I mean by that is, so if you have to go out to work, right, to be able to sit down with your child and say, "I love you so very much and I wish I could spend more time with you, but I am going to go out to work so that I can make money so that we can, you know, I can put food on the table and we can do nice things. And having that communication, then you never have to worry that the child might think, oh, I'm not loved enough because my parent isn't around. Or equally, you know, if it's sort of being at home, but, you know, it's lovely being at home, but equally when you go to school, you're going to make lots of friends. And, you know, the more we communicate with children, because children really are still in those early years. And I think that's why people feel so much pressure. They're still learning about the world and learning whatever everything is. So, you know, they take messages in so easily, which again is why people feel the pressure, because they don't want to give the wrong message, but therefore communicating with children so that they can learn correctly and not misinterpret things.
But any relationship you have, whether that be with a partner, whether that be with your child, I think communication is always number one for both. Because first of all, if we communicate with our children that, look, you know, I'm not choosing to go to work. I have to go to work. And this is, and it's for us all.
And same with, like, you know, I said before about people feeling like they can't buy their children the latest toys or whatever it might be, that they then might feel that, oh, I feel so bad because they can't be like their friends. Communicate it, you know, I really want to buy you this toy, but I need to, you know, get some more money first and work a bit harder so I can get these things. You know, times are difficult. Explaining those things to children, because, you know, they listen and they understand. And I think that we just assume that they will, that we're doing the right thing by keeping things from them in some ways.
Yeah, no.
But knowing that you have to go to work, I think one of the best things that you can ever do is just spending time with your children as much as you can.
Yeah,
but going back to communication, it's the key to life, you know, in everything. And you know, talk about communicating with your children, your partners, your work colleagues, but we must never forget, and we do a lot, the communication that we have with ourselves, because again, that the way that we communicate with ourselves affects everything else that we do. And a lot of people don't realize that they can run their own internal dialogue, and, you know, it's not running them.
One thing that I get quite upset about, really, and I get it, you know, this isn't a criticism, but I sort of feel, so you get some parents, and because they work, they don't spend much time with the children, but what they then do is they overcompensate with gifts and sending them on trips. And, you know, and from that, that's something that doesn't really sit well with me, because I feel that it's more important to spend time with children than it is, you know, to sort of go, well, I can't spend time with you, but there you go, have that computer game, or I'll send you on holiday to such and such a place with this other family or whatever. And I just think it's so important. But this is where communication comes in. If we sort of say, look, I really wish I could spend time with you, I can't, but what I'm going to do so that you're not bored, I'm going to give you this, or I'm going to send you here.
But do you not think as well, children don't remember the toys, they don't remember the gifts, they don't remember all those things. What they do remember is the time spent, or even those conversations of understanding that the time can't be spent right now, but looking forward to that time spent when it can be.
Definitely.
And we obviously asked some questions about parenting, and we asked our listeners to send us some questions in about things that they wanted to ask us about how to sort of, you know, deal with certain things in parenting. And on the topic of communication, we had a question from Elise, which is about advice for how to speak to small children about having a parent with addiction. So, you know, if her partner is an addict, how can she explain that to a small child, or like at what point is that appropriate? How do you communicate that? Because obviously as a child starts to get older, they might start to ask questions about parents, for example. How would you?
Well obviously children don't understand the word addiction, and I won't really go too deep. I think the starting point is to sit down and say, look, I just want to share something with you, and it's really important that you know this, that your mum or your dad are struggling. You know, they've got some issue that they're struggling with, and I want you to know, and they're not spending time with you, or they're away because of this problem that they've got, but they love you very much. And just given that, so obviously as time goes on, you can explain that more. As a child gets older, you can say, well, actually, when they were struggling, they were struggling with this or whatever it was.
I think any advice that we, or anything that we speak to our children about, should always, always be age appropriate. So if parent is an addict, then obviously you're not going to say, you know, your mummy or daddy's an addict. What you're going to say is, look, mummy or daddy have some issues that makes them very sad. And at the moment, they are struggling a little bit, so we're not going to see them as much, or they might have to take some medicine that's making them behave not like they would normally, but it does just have to be age appropriate. And I think the big message in all of this is, as that child grows, is helping that child understand that their parent wasn't absent because of them, that their parent wasn't an addict because of them. They were self-medicating because they had some emotional issues, emotional wounds that were too difficult for them to bear on a daily basis.
And I think that's really important, isn't it? That, you know, to explain that they are poorly and therefore they're not able to look after you right now, but that doesn't mean they don't love you. Because I think the biggest thing is making sure the child isn't affected by feeling that it was a problem with them. And that's a big thing we see in it, isn't it, in clinic a lot. Not just necessarily with addiction, but with a lot of mental health issues, that people felt growing up that they were sort of not enough, or that there was something wrong with them because they didn't understand the problem their parents were suffering with, which obviously was nothing to do with them, right? But they didn't understand that as a child. So I think explaining to a child that, you know, this is nothing, this isn't because of you, they're just poorly, but they love you very much, but they might not be able to care for you right now because of it, which makes them very sad.
So those two key points: that your parent loves you very much, they're struggling right now, and but this is, they'd love to be with you, but because they're struggling. So this is nothing to do with you at all.
And another thing where that leads to is that a lot, you know, look, children copy behavior. So, you know, why does every child have their accent? And that is because they copy their environment, they copy their parents. And another thing that we need to be aware of is that children, you know, if you have any sort of an issue, a phobia, a fear, then your children might copy that as well. So
again, I was just going to say as well, we had a question from Linda who said basically that, how do you stop your child from copying something that you struggle with? So copying a phobia, you know, because obviously we do see in clinic people with phobias because they've copied a parent, or an OCD.
But even anxiety. So if you're an anxious parent, your child will display, will become an anxious child, not because they feel anxious, but because that's how they've been taught to view the world.
How often do we hear that though as well? Like, I'm a worrier. Why are you a worrier? Because my parents were worriers.
Yeah,
so
absolutely,
you've been taught to look out for things that are worrying, or things that, you know, you should be cautious
of.
So you don't know any different. So so what would your advice be for that then?
And again, my advice would be, and this is something that we say to a lot of people, is sit down with your child and say, look, you know, if it's a phobia, for example, you know, mummy doesn't like spiders, or mummy doesn't like vomit because something happened when I was little and I misunderstood, and I haven't got it right, I've got it wrong. So I need you to not be scared so that I can copy you and get my strength from you. So I think, again, it comes down to communication and just saying to the child, because look, a phobia is an irrational fear. So if you have a phobia, you don't want it. So you know it's an irrational fear, and explaining that to your child, just saying, you know, mummy's got it wrong, or daddy's got it wrong. You know, this thing isn't really going to help you, but hurt you, but I can't help feeling the way I am, but I'm going to get help for it, or I am getting help for it. So that they then can maybe show off to you how they're really brave in with that thing that you're fearful of.
And then obviously as well, like, with that being sort of reinforcing that when they do those things, like, oh, that's amazing, like, you're so brave, you're so great, you know, so that they know that they're doing, because kids learn from us, don't they, what's the right and wrong thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So reinforcing behaviors they do correctly that we maybe wouldn't be able to do ourselves, or sort of, you know, that's a great thing. And sort of saying, oh no, don't, you know, if they're doing something, they're copying us, oh no, you don't need to worry about that, that's just me being silly. Yeah. Like, you don't need to learn that that's safe.
A brilliant, another great parenting point is praise. You know, praising, children love to be acknowledged, to be seen, to be praised. And another thing that I have a little bit of an issue with is when people label a child as a naughty child. I don't believe naughty children exist. They are children that are not being stimulated enough, you know. And yes, I accept that some children might need more stimulation than others, and it can be exhausting. And I do get that. So this is, again, isn't a criticism, but to label a child a naughty child is just so, it's the wrong thing to do, because that child will then go, okay, that's, I'm the naughty child, so that's who I'll be and that's who I'll become.
So just talk, while you're talking about labels, a child should never have any negative label.
No.
And you know, sometimes those labels are born out of comparison, where you have two children, one super confident and, you know, usually an older one. And then the other child is, oh, they're the shy one, right? They're not shy.
On that note, can I just say as well, you said there are no negative labels, but no labels at all. Because actually, just by giving the other one a positive label, that's where that comes from, right? So if you've got a sibling and your parent goes, oh, she's the confident one, they don't even have to say you're the shy one. It can just be that you assume, well, if she's the confident one, I must be confident.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So any labels, right?
Yeah, any labels.
Well, other than I don't positive. Necessarily agree with that. I I think always one thing that we've always said to both of you is that you're real clever. And I think that, you know, because we become what we think about, if you have the same label, then that's fine. Because there's no comparison.
Yeah, so what you're saying is you can give the labels as long as like the labels are equitable. So like everyone's got that. So it's not like kind of they're really confident, but you're not.
Yeah, because let's be honest, if you know, if we aren't encouraging our children, who is? Because, you know, with going to school, some teachers are encouraging, but others aren't. Others are the complete opposite. Yeah. So we've got to control that as much as we can, and we've got to encourage our children.
And interestingly as well, how much those labels make a difference. I mean, I know someone that I saw in clinic recently, such an intelligent woman who's so successful in her career, but yet has massive imposter syndrome and felt so bad about herself, purely and simply because in the ironic sense of three siblings, she was the most intelligent. So the parents never encouraged her, but really encouraged the other two. So in their heads, well, she doesn't need encouragement, right? Because she's super intelligent. She's doing amazing. So they never said it to her.
Yeah.
So to her siblings, it was, you know, you're great. And so now inside, she feels that she's not good enough, even though on paper, anyone would go, oh my God, like you're so much cleverer than anyone in your family. You've done better than anyone. Like she was amazing, but felt so bad because she'd never been. So I think I can see the parents' perspective on that. They've tried to do the best. Possible and go, right, let's build up the ones that need it. But in doing so, actually really damaged her self-esteem because she was doing all these things but felt, well, I'm not seen for them anyway.
But I said at the beginning, you know, as parents, we do things from the best possible place, but sometimes it can massively backfire on
us. And this is another tip, you know, a great parenting tip, and something that I feel has really worked for me as a mum, and that is that I have often held my hands up to Liv and Hunter and said, listen, you know, I'm still fairly new at this and you didn't come with an instruction manual. So, you know, and I get things wrong. And I hope that you would both agree that me and Dad, you know, if ever, for example, we've chastised you and we were incorrect to do so, or we did something wrong, that we've held our hands up and said, I got that wrong and I shouldn't have said that, or I shouldn't have done that, or I shouldn't have reacted quite that way. And just to point out to you both and to your children that we're human, you know, we had you live and obviously had you for 8 years. And then, so we knew how to deal with one child eventually, but then we had to relearn how to deal with two. And it is a learning curve. And I wish
but
we
do
could
not think
say,
as well that because children learn by example, actually that's such a positive because it teaches children to hold their hands up and admit when they make mistakes.
100%.
Because if you're from, I think that's such a big problem that we often have, that people have never seen parents admit mistakes and go, oh, do you know what? I was wrong on that. I'm sorry. So then as children, we grow up learning not to accept responsibility for things. And then it just creates more tension in a household. It's funny. I was only talking to someone yesterday about how someone said to me, oh, your family is so close. Do you not argue? Like how, like I could never be that close in my family. And I hear that a lot. People say that to me. I don't know if people say that to you, Hunter, a lot, but people always say that to me, like, how could you have that? And I think that my biggest answer to that genuinely is communication, because I really do think that because we have a household where there is nobody that will ever be kind of unable to accept responsibility or hold their hands up or say, you know, yeah, do you know what? I made a mistake there. That we all feel safe enough to do that. And therefore arguments or disagreements diffuse so quickly.
True.
It doesn't stop them happening because we can always misunderstand each other, you know, get things wrong. But the fact that we're all able to go, okay, hang on a minute, like, was I wrong? Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I get that. I see how you've taken that. And we're all capable of holding our hands up and accepting responsibility because you two have done that.
Yes.
Me and Hunter have learned that. And therefore we can all communicate harmoniously.
Can I also mention that one thing that part of growing up and part of interacting with the world is knowing where you fit. And therefore to find that, you've got to push boundaries. Right? So all children push boundaries. And, you know, and from a parent's perspective, it's our job really to make sure that those boundaries are within an area that we feel will keep that child safe and okay, but will also nurture the child to grow. But that's what, you know, so, you know, going back to you saying naughty child, there is no such thing as a naughty child. It's a child trying to push the boundaries. And if you don't deal with that and understand what's going on, then you can label it.
But then equally, and again, something that we've observed is the child that, you know, it feels that they're not, they've got a sibling, for example, younger sibling getting most of the attention. So the, you know, they've tried to be good and they don't get seen. So they go, okay.
Can we just cover that off though? Because which is a big part of life, that if you're the first child and you have your parents' undivided attention for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it might be, and then suddenly another child comes along, it's very easy to view that, hold on a minute, I'm not getting that attention that I've always had before, and this new child is getting all the attention, and seeing that out of perspective.
Yeah, absolutely, because obviously the new one is less capable, you know, than the older one. So it's not by choice. The parent literally has no option but to look after the younger one.
It's funny that, because I don't think I felt that, because there was quite a big age gap between me and Hunter. So there was 8 years between us. So I was 8. So I was already kind of, I was so excited about being able to look after a little baby. Mm. Like, do you know what I mean? That it was so exciting for me.
Yeah.
Which I think really helped. But obviously most parents have children more in close succession. And therefore it's like, hang on a minute, why am I not enough? Why do they need to have another one? And I think, again, communication, explaining to children that, you know, we really want to have another one. We've always wanted to have, you know, 3 children or 2 children or whatever.
But even saying, you know, you were so amazing that we want another one because you were so great. Yeah. And I've got to say that
we want another friend for you.
Yeah. But you were very much a part. You know, we sort of said, look, we're thinking of asking, like, for a little baby, what do you think? And you were like, yeah. And then when we told you that I was pregnant, oh my God, it was so sweet. Because we were dreading telling you.
I remember, I was so excited.
And we were thinking, oh my God, how's Liv going to accept this? Like, is she going to be okay with it? Like, when it actually goes in and she realises it's not all about Liv anymore and there's another little human coming into our lives. And yeah, you were like...
I've got to say, the only thing I was disappointed about ever was that he was a boy. And that was purely and simply just because I wanted a friend. Like, do you know what I mean though? I wanted a little, you're another right little girl. Like, no, I don't mind. I've dealt with it now. I prefer that he's a boy now because I actually think we could have had more arguments about things and we would have had more things to, do you know what I mean? Like, but when I was little, I was like, I want a little girl to put in dresses and be my doll. Yeah. And then, you know, but other than that, I was so excited.
I love the fact
I'm going to tell you something else that maybe you don't know, Hunter, that when your mum was pregnant with you, that we actually found out and did the pregnancy test on a TV show.
I've forgotten that.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
No,
yeah, you're a media child. And I've forgotten about that. That was
a TV show.
Yeah. Oh, it was a long time ago. Yeah. Well,
I'll try and find the footage for
20 odd years ago.
I was thinking he was going to say, then we found out you were twins or something, and he was going to tell you that, like, you know, those things where people like absorb.
Yeah, it was a show that we're doing.
You know, those horror films where people.
And there was an element of reality to it, and we were just at home and it was, we filmed it. So
but I think another string to our bow, as a family and our relationship, because I love the fact that both you, Liv and Hunter, are so solid. I love the fact that you speak to us so much, both of you. I honestly feel so blessed and privileged by the fact that you do both speak to us
and about some uncomfortable topics.
Yeah, I love
a lot of people that don't even talk to the friends about you, let alone the parents.
You have no idea what.
Yeah,
how
humbled about it.
Very, very humbled, and what a privilege that feels. But I also think that another thing, and even obviously when you guys were at uni, we still brought you in, and that was mealtime. So one thing that if we're home, we always sit around a dinner table together. And, you know, whether that's half an hour, 45 minutes, but always we sit together. And obviously when one of you was at uni, we'd usually bring the other one in at that time if you were available, and we'd sort of have you on FaceTime to talk to us whilst we were having dinner. But I do think that family time in the rush and the mayhem of everyday life, of homework, of work, of friends, of all the stresses at school and friendships, relationships, to have that time sat around a dinner table together and sharing an evening meal together, that's something that has always been important for me, which is why we always do it. And I actually think that that has held us together very well as well.
No, totally. I totally agree. So I was just going to go to another question, because we've obviously covered off about how can a parent not pass their anxiety issue onto a child?
Yeah.
But if that does happen, or you have started to acknowledge that. So Alice asked, how can I help a 14-year-old with anxiety issues? So if you do have a child, if someone's listening who does have a child who already has anxiety issues, what's the best way of dealing with that or supporting them? I know we've already kind of said, if they're a bit younger, to encourage them, oh no, you don't need to do that. But when they're sort of getting to that teenage years, or I suppose when they're facing like teenage anxieties, sort of things like bullying or school exams, all those sorts of things, how would you suggest a parent should support someone with anxiety?
Well, obviously knowing that anxiety is a symptom of, it's a way of protecting yourself, is sitting down with the child and saying, okay, let's go through what could you possibly be anxious because, and asking the question. And the thing is, again, I think one thing that we sometimes lose sight of as a parent, we start telling children as opposed to asking. Mm. And, you know, when we tell a child something, it's from our perspective, and the child might have a totally different perspective. So asking questions, you know, why do you think you feel anxious? How has this come about? What's happened? Is there anyone in particular that's making you feel anxious? Mm-hmm. And getting these questions, and then looking at, okay, because invariably there will be some things that you can deal with that can reduce the anxieties, some things that you might be out of your control that you can't deal with. So it's how can we look at that in a different way to reduce the anxieties?
But also I think explaining that anxiety for exams, for relationships, you know, being bullied at school, whatever, that to feel anxious about those things is completely normal. You're actually feeling normal about circumstances that are quite stressful.
That's right. And the level of anxiety will be based upon the amount of the perceived benefit that you get from whatever you're feeling anxious about.
So I think ultimately what we're saying is, look, find out what is that cause, and explaining to your child, look, feeling elements of anxiety in certain situations is perfectly normal. And what we have to do is find what that situation is, break it down and resolve it. So if it's exam stress, is explaining to your kids, as we did with both with you, Liv and Hunter, that look, if you don't do great, you can reset. It's not the end of the world. Just try your best. That's it. You know, take the pressure off. If it's in regards to bullying, then explaining to your child the sort of the concepts. And we've got so much stuff on our YouTube channel and on our TikTok, helping answer those questions, helping children understand that bullies don't bully, people don't become a bully because of you. People bully you because either you're very nice and you let them get away with it, and they feel very unheard at home, or they're copying behavior from home. But understanding that it's not them can help. Speaking to school, speaking to, you know, encouraging them to have, you know, maybe some counselling, whatever they might need, and maybe trying to do some group meditation together. You know, teach your child how to meditate, or go on YouTube and do it together. Meditation, mindfulness, calming techniques, going out and getting, you know, sort of like, right, come on, if when we're feeling like this, let's go outside, let's get on our bikes, let's go have a walk, let's just go and take some breaths, to give them some coping mechanisms.
And I think you've just touched on something that's really, really important there. And I'd like to say, from my perspective, of something that's really helped with me that you've always done, is to, you know, because a lot of people say, why do we feel comfortable to talk to you about things, and why do we, like, you know, sort of come to you? Obviously it makes sense because you're a therapist, but still people don't go to their parents for things, why do we do that? And I think knowing that if I've ever come to you, and I'm sure Hunter would say the same, that I know I'm going to be supported, and I know that even if you don't know the answer right now, you'll find one. And that's the key thing that I would like to just stress to people listening, that if your child comes to you and says they're struggling, to be able to say, okay, right, well, that's fine, we'll find an answer. There's, you know, Dad's always said to me, there's always an answer. If we've not got it right now, we'll find one. There's always a solution. And if you come to me, you know, we can sit down, we'll work through it together. There's no judgment. We'll figure the situation out. And I think if you can give that to your children and communicate that, then they will come to you and you can help them out.
I think especially in the hard times as well, if something that happens, not getting angry or not raising your voice and dealing with it.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Patiently, I guess. And at least wait until after the problem's gone, so I just start talking about to them about, if say they did something wrong or whatever, then maybe do that after they've dealt with the situation. You
know Yeah. So I think it's time to start to put together our little tips for our handbook to happiness on parenting and anxious children. So should we start with you, Hunter, with your sore throat today? What have you got to add for our handbook to happiness?
Just what's already been said, I think that really the biggest thing, at least for me, was just knowing that I was always gonna be loved and supported no matter what, and just being able to talk to you about things and knowing that even if you weren't going to be necessarily happy with it, you wouldn't raise your voice, you wouldn't shout. It was always dealt with very,
like, calmly.
Yeah.
Good.
And just that environment, I think, was very important.
Nice. Liv?
I think a big thing that we face a lot in clinic, people that do have issues from sort of their childhood, is that thing that we came to before about comparison and feeling not good enough. And it's really hard for parents to know how to support, especially if they've got multiple children, to know how to support them so that they don't have that issue of one feeling better or worse than another, or that comparison of labels and all those sorts of things. So I think one thing I want to say is just really to really encourage every child, no matter how many you've got, whether you've got one or multiple, is to encourage them all for their personal strengths and really to avoid comparison, avoid them comparing to their other siblings. And even if it's just one child, avoid them comparing themselves to people at school. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to throw, very late in the episode today, I'm going to throw in a little science corner, which is research that basically shows that, you know, if children are encouraged to focus on their own personal growth and their own personal progress, say academically, for example, rather than focusing on the general outcome, that actually those children have better well-being, they have better mental health, they feel happier and more positive, and they also have more motivation and self-esteem, right? Which, so what I mean by focusing on their own development is, you know, okay, so you got, say, a C last time, and now you've got a B. That's incredible. Not looking at, okay, well, Jane got an A star. That's irrelevant to you, right? So, because if we look at how we're achieving and we're progressing rather than comparing ourselves to either siblings or other people in school, it's so beneficial to children's mental health. So I think that's a really key thing, is to, you know, because children naturally do compare themselves to other people around them, often at school, in class, etc. So really bringing them back to focusing on their personal achievements, their personal growth and progress, I think is absolutely invaluable. And one other final thing I would just add in there is to, on that note of focusing on their personal achievements, is to really make your children reflect on both their achievements and all the things that they feel very, very grateful for. Because again, you know, psychology research shows that that leads to more resilient children in the long run, especially if you feel that you're a bit of a worrier and you don't want your children to go down that route. Actually actively practicing with them to look out for good things, saying to them, tell me one great thing about your day that's happened today, and shift their focus, especially while their brains are so malleable and they start to create that and see the world in that way, you know, start practicing that with them. And what we see is that that leads to more optimistic adults, and adults that get less easily, you know, they're more kind of resilient and less easily fazed by adversity in their future lives, because they're constantly looking for the good. And I think that's one of the best things, looking for the good in yourself, so it boosts your self-esteem, but looking for the good in life, and helping them to start practicing that, is one of the best gifts you can give a child.
Nick.
Yeah, just picking up on what Liv said there, and something that we did ourselves, excuse me, something that we did ourselves, which was have a good news bell. And the purpose of the good news bell, it's attached to our wall. We would say to both of you, at the end of the day, when you came home from school, tell us what's the best thing that's happened today, and you can ring the bell. And a bit like Pavlov and the dogs, you were looking for reasons to ring that bell when you came home from school. So that's the first thing. And then communication, it's the key to life. You've got to try and discuss. And so, sometimes things, it's hard to open that conversation if it's a difficult topic, but do it, because, you know, once you get those things out of the way, life is a lot smoother. And lastly, I was going to finish on a joke, because you know, I know loads of jokes on parenting, and I thought, well, why is it now that whenever I tell a joke, people say that's a dad joke, right? So if I wasn't a dad, would it still be a dad joke? Because I don't know. What is the difference? Can you tell a dad joke if you're not a dad? And what is the difference between a normal joke and a dad joke? And then I realized it's when you tell the joke, it becomes apparent.
Oh, dear me. Oh, dear me.
We're the worst one so far.
I think so, too.
Yeah. I mean,
I normally give him credit for when they're on topic, but I don't even think that one deserves credit.
No, I wouldn't even bother. Sweep past it. So my final tip in our handbook to happiness on parenting and anxious children is not to ever be frightened of holding your hands up and saying to your child, you know, I got it wrong, or I'm still learning, or tell me, because you didn't come with an instruction manual, tell me what I can do to help. So I think that's one thing. I think explaining that, you know, some forms of anxiety in certain situations is quite normal. Seeking a solution with them. We've always said to our kids, look, we might not know the answer, but we know there is one, and we'll find it, and we'll find it together. Always giving your child a safe space, somewhere that is always somewhere they know they can come to and be supported, loved, nurtured, without any sort of shouting or without any aggression, without any negative judgment, I think is also really important. And just telling, not just showing, but telling your children just how much you love them. I know that both Nick and I, you know, from somebody that didn't even want kids, I can say that having children was just the most incredible thing that ever happened. And
it could just be because you had us though. Well, do you know what I mean? It could just maybe, be because you had maybe. Some excellent children.
But it is very humbling. And children, they really are a gift, and they're a gift that needs to be worked with and together and worked on, just like any project. The more you put in, the better the results. So I guess, you know, and like I say, and don't be worried as a parent, you know, we all get things wrong. That's pretty normal. But like I say, if we hold our hands up and go, oh goodness, you know what, mummy got it wrong, daddy got it wrong, or I misunderstood, then that's absolutely okay. So thank you for listening to today's podcast. I think that we have all been incredibly open and had some really great discussions there, which we hope will make a very big difference to you, to your lives, to your children's lives as well. So thank you so much. Thanks so much for joining us. Wherever you're listening to this podcast today, do be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and we'd be incredibly grateful of a 5-star review.
Oh, and don't forget to recommend our podcast to your family and friends.
And if you'd like to have a look at some more free resources, take a look at our website, nickandeva.com.
If you want to drop us a question, we'd love to hear from you. Send it to admin@speakman.tv.
And you can follow us. We're at The Speakmans on all social media platforms. On YouTube, we're Handbook to Happiness Pod. If you are struggling, do be sure to speak to your general practitioner. And all that's left to say is that we appreciate you spending time with us today.